Hi, I'm David Sweden, Head of Internal and Executive Communications at Temenos. Welcome to the first of some very special Temenos Talks as Temenos turns 30. To mark this milestone, we've been celebrating the innovation and determination to do things differently that's made us everyone's banking platform. And we want to keep innovating so that we can continue powering a world of banking that creates opportunities for everyone. These short podcasts will help us focus our innovation on areas that are going to be the most impactful. We'll be talking to some key clients and partners about how end customer behaviors and needs are changing, the visions that are emerging to meet these shifts, and crucially, where technology providers can add value to help those visions become reality. First up, we have a fantastic discussion as Temenos' Chief Strategy Officer, Kanika Hope, is joined by Mark Dines. Let's hear what they have to say. So Kanika, over to you.
Thanks, David, and welcome everyone. I'm delighted to be joined today by Mark Dines, Managing Director and Partner at the Boston Consulting Group. Mark is perfectly placed to give us insights into the future of banking technology and the fintech industry and the opportunities and challenges that lie therein. He heads up BCG's digital delivery and challenger banking practice, focusing on both digital transformation of incumbent banks as well as helping to build new challenger banks. He also created the BCG Digital Accelerator proposition, Incubate. We at Temenos have benefited many times from Mark's deep knowledge of the retail banking technology space. He has advised us in the past during his Oliver Wyman days on our go-to-market approach. Let us start with the hottest trend this year. Generative AI has been making headlines since the start of 2023. How are banks embracing this trend and where do you see this going forward?
Well, first of all, Kanika, thank you very much for having me. Very pleased to be here. So Gen AI for us, I think, has got a number of different components. I think we are beginning to see the transition away from use case, what I would call use case proliferation, where banks are looking at the different use cases that they might have in Gen AI, to starting to really narrow down and focus on where they are going to get the most value creation from using Gen AI. Now, I think there's a number of very obvious areas, whether or not that is in relationship management and the ability to be able to offer suitable products, suitable services, whether or not that's through to things like operations, the way in which Gen AI can help create a operations framework that allows you to more efficiently understand what customers are asking for, to look at exactly what the service request is, and then to be able to service that more effectively by surfacing the right information to your agents in an effective way, through to things like fraud monitoring, where Gen AI could be used in the future to look at areas where fraud and payments capabilities might be used to take existing processes that are done by humans and start to operationalize them in a way which uses technology. That's where we're seeing the flow of activity. I still think it's very early days. Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about the use of large language models. Everybody's talking about the tools that they might use. We're starting to see a proliferation of tools come to market. I still think it's very early to determine exactly where the successes for AI is going to be, Gen AI is going to be. I also think from a regulatory perspective, regulators have felt like they're a little bit behind the curve. And therefore, when you start thinking about where regulation might be catching up, the use of private data, the use of confidential data, how banks might be able to use that or might not be able to use that in different regulatory regimes around the world, I think we'll start to see perhaps some convergence of regulation on a global basis as regulators start coming out with some new regulations to control Gen AI. But I still think we're very much in the infancy of Gen AI. I also think that from a value creation perspective, it is still unclear exactly what the target state will look like when I am fully using AI capabilities.
On the regulation, is there any geography where it's more advanced? Because we recently commissioned a report with The Economist, and one of the case examples in that report were around what you mentioned, relationship manager enablement in the wealth space.
Yeah.
And that happens to be DBS in Singapore, which is using generative AI for its wealth managers to optimize and personalize investment portfolios. So again, early days yet.
Yep.
So just wanted to get your take on a geographic slant to this, if there is any.
So, I mean, I think there's definitely some geographies out in Asia Pac, which are Singapore as being one of them, very much at the forefront of the regulations that will come around Gen AI. I also think, even to a lesser extent, the UK with the recent summit that the government sponsored
with Musk
flying in, and you know, clearly the UK is wanting to take a position at the forefront of some of the regulatory shaping of the Gen AI landscape. So I think we will continue to push in a UK perspective. And also, I think from a UK perspective, we have some of the knowledge and capabilities to set up these kind of regulatory frameworks. So I think that will play out. I also think clearly some of the mature markets around Europe and the US, again, if I was to be slightly unkind, I'd say they would feel a little bit behind where the industry is moving to. But the industry is moving so fast, it is accelerating so much in this space. You know, if I think about just from a BCG context, I think in 2022, we did something like 7 Gen AI projects. I think so far this year, we've done over 150. You know, the growth has been exponential. So from a perspective of where do we see regulators, I think there will be the mature markets that move as quickly as possible to regulate. I still think there is a perceived risk of the capabilities of AI moving quicker than the regulators can keep up. We'll see how that plays out over a period of time.
And any examples that you would cite of banks without breaking confidentiality?
So it's always difficult to do it without breaking confidentiality. We are certainly working with a number of US European banks on what I would describe as moving past use cases to pilots. Mm-hmm. A lot of the work, again, seems to be, you know, we can use AI to look at, for example, product features. I know we're working with one client on how do we configure products based on a set of behaviors that Gen AI can effectively model for us that we could model, but it would take much longer. So that's one work. And we're also working, I know, with a very prominent client on what does the Gen AI capabilities give us from a contact center perspective. How can we make that much more efficient? Also, how can we make it much more human if I'm, you know, not using a dialer, but I'm using more of a discursive type experience? So those are at least two use cases we're seeing. I mean, there are, frankly, you know, we've all got I think every consultancy in the world has got the list of use cases that clients are thinking about. I do think it's about take that use case, put it into pilot, see what value I get, see what learnings I get, and then work out exactly where I want to deploy it across the organization. And we're still very much at the infancy stage.
Now let us talk a bit about a more classical but nevertheless very relevant topic of digital transformation. While disruptive technologies are constantly driving banking, many incumbent banks are very much still on the journey towards digital. They're still catching up with the digitally native banks, as we know, or the fintechs. And particularly from our context in Temenos, we operate in 150 countries around the world. So obviously, banks are at different levels of maturity. So how do you see banks approaching this? Are they choosing progressive renovation? Are they continuing to build digitally native subsidiaries, greenfield offshoots? We believe that's a little bit on the wane in recent months, but would love to get your views on it. Or are they following a sort of build and migrate technology strategy?
So I think that's a great question. I think from my perspective, we are seeing what I would describe as the kind of macroeconomic factors going on around the world at the moment, the uncertainty definitely having an impact on what banks are choosing to do. So how would I frame that? I'd say we're seeing far less activity on we want to do an open heart surgery on a core banking platform and we want to go for the full 5 to 7 year rip and replace my core banking platform. What we're seeing much more of is, one, let's pilot, let's work out how do we get to value quickly rather than waiting for a migration that might be 5-7 years away. So can I start smaller and progressively take learnings, take value to then effectively fund what then comes downstream, and also just get more comfortable with newer technologies and newer ways of working. So that what I'd call is progressive POC. How do I take a POC but expand it to actually deliver business value, take the learnings and then expand out over a period of time? So I think we are seeing definitely a slowdown in organizations that are looking at full core banking replacement. I think we are also seeing a slowdown in challenger bank builds. Our data suggests that if we look at the growth that happened in the period 2016 to 2020, and we look at the growth that's been happening since 2020 in challenger banks, the growth is about halved in terms of new challenger banks coming to market. So I still think there will be challenger banks coming to market, especially in markets where you take a look at the existing incumbents and you say, I think there's a market opportunity for a new bank to enter that market. But I think they will become more and more specific, looking at segments first, not trying to necessarily be a universal bank. Again, our data suggests that if we take the numbers always changing, but we think there's been about 312 new challengers come to market since 2016. If we look at how many of those are profitable, think it's 16, 16 of them.
Yeah,
16 of them, right? Yeah. So now when I look at what's the path to profitability, it is typically that they have got to lending quickly.
Yes.
And they have offered a universal account, but actually they've used that universal account as a prime, try to use it as a primary account to then offer lending quite quickly. So do I think that the challenges will continue and perhaps migration challenges will continue? I do, but I think it will be at a slower pace. We are still seeing clients around the world asking us what's the best approach. Should we go challenger migration? Should we do progressive modernization? Should we do full core banking replacement? I think it is very specific to individual markets, mm-hmm. what the best approach is. Also specific to the technology estate that organization has and what strategically they're trying to achieve.
By tiers, does it differ?
It does. So again, I think tier ones typically take a view, which is we have technology capabilities ourselves. There's quite a lot of things we can build ourselves. There's still quite a lot of things that, you know, we would want to own. I think as you start coming down into the lower end of tier ones, into tier twos, I think more and more they're looking at from a technology perspective, do I want to really own and where there's added value? And what do I think actually I want a partner to ensure, you know, we were talking with a client recently about like resiliency and how resilient do I need to be as a bank? Can I get a partner to effectively take on that resiliency? So I think it will definitely differ by segment. It will also, frankly, differ by the strategic ambition of the management team.
Yeah.
You know, it is, if I'm about to embark on a 5 to 7 year digital transformation, whether or not that is core banking replacement, whether or not that is refreshing material parts of the estate, that for a lot of executive teams, is a very big decision. And I think the macroeconomic environment, again, is just making some of those decisions feel like they're taking a bit longer and feel like, frankly, I can push the can a bit further down the road until such time as the world looks in a slightly more stable position. And then at that point, I'll make a decision.
Is this linked to the appetite for public cloud and software as a service? Because obviously certain markets are less mature than others when it comes to public cloud.
Yeah, I think absolutely. So, you know, there are still certain geographies where regulators are uncomfortable with the use, forget private or public cloud, actually just uncomfortable with the use of cloud. But I think we are seeing a transition, maybe slower than some commentators were expecting, but certainly a transition to a more SaaS-based model. Therefore, having a SaaS-based solution clearly becomes important in those geographies. Having the ability to be a multi-tenanted SaaS solution also is important in those situations and for some clients. So I think we will continue to get, we will continue to see a progressive shift to cloud. I think also as more and more countries regulate for cloud, allow cloud, more and more banks in those jurisdictions take a cloud solution, it will effectively become the norm. Now, is that a one-year trend? Of course not, given how much is already on-prem and how quickly decisions on core banking change, for example, get made. But I think that is definitely the direction of the market. Therefore, having a SaaS-based solution becomes critically important to be competitive in the market going forward, because that is what our clients are telling us more and more. They want to pay for effectively what they consume, and they may want to consume in a modular way, which obviously is much more difficult if you're doing an on-premise solution.
Very good. So as I mentioned in the introduction, you do a huge amount of work in the world of banking innovation. So what defines innovation for you in banking? Is it embedded finance? Is it emerging business models such as banking as a service or super apps? Or, of course, what we talked about earlier, generative AI?
So I think all of those are actually quite innovative in their own way. I think for me, it's about where am I pushing the boundaries of what is existing in the market, capabilities that might exist in the market, how am I perhaps packaging them in a different way? You know, BNPL is not really a new product. It's a lending product that just stages the way in which I make the payments, but actually the way in which it was packaged
by the point of engagement,
exactly,
at the point of sale.
At the point of sale for the consumer, suddenly felt like quite different because the consumer was effectively getting, in inverted brackets, a free loan. Well, of course, it wasn't a free loan. It was just being paid for by somebody else, but not them. So I think the packaging can be innovative. In terms of current accounts, I do think there's been no current account innovation for a very long time, maybe, you know, for the last 30 years. But on the periphery of financial services, with the fintechs, with even some of the incumbents taking quite innovative positions, whether or not it's on a banking as a service play, as we're seeing in the UK example, or whether or not it's the development of new capabilities in the PFM space where I can help consumers educate them on their finances. I think we are seeing pockets of innovation. I think the problem for the incumbent banks remains, though, how do they foster a spirit of innovation in the confines of a large organization? Mm. And that is really, really difficult to do. Will a big bank ever move as fast as a fintech? I just don't believe that's possible. Internal governance processes, risk controls, compliance functions all make that really difficult. So the question for the incumbents is how can they maintain relevancy? And we've seen, you know, lots of commentary and lots of client sessions that we have is, you know, what's the role of banking going forward? How do I make sure that I'm not being disintermediated? Well, I think innovation plays a very key role in ensuring relevancy to customers, embedding yourselves in customers' lives at the point of requirement and need. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, innovation teams are typically seen somehow in incumbent banks as kind of an adjunct off to the side, smaller budgets, kind of not doing anything. I think there are some interesting organizations that were around the world who have taken a very different approach. I mean, there's certainly some Nordic examples mm-hmm. where they've taken quite a different approach to innovation, where they have really invested quite heavily in businesses to drive innovation and foster innovation to basically play back into their kind of parent business. I think that's a very interesting model. But I do think, again, when we start thinking about Gen AI, again, being at the forefront of innovation, and the question for most incumbent banks and most executives will tell you, they do not want to be leading on innovation. They want to be the fast follower. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be at the avant-garde, but they certainly don't want to be left behind. And I think there is a danger with how much innovation is happening at this particular moment, that it would be very easy for some of the incumbent banks to lose position, market share, customers, because they simply cannot innovate quickly enough. And therefore, the role of consulting firms, technology companies like Temenos, is to help them foster an environment where they can actually innovate quickly. They can bring new products to market quicker. They can ensure that they are continuing to meet their customers' needs.
I think one point that you made about there's been very little innovation in the current account, right? That's interesting, because I came across a piece on innovation has been very fast on the customer engagement front, but not so much at the heart of the products.
Yeah.
And okay. Maybe incumbent banks could differentiate against the fintechs by going to the heart of the product. So it's really about focus as well.
Yeah.
So it's not about being the fast follower in the areas where fintechs have made strides, but to actually find alternate ways of innovating, which yeah. then help you to differentiate.
I would agree with that. I think there's been a focus, perhaps an over-focus on the app.
Exactly.
And the UI and the UX experience.
The core of the product.
And of course, that is important. Of course, that is important.
Yes.
You know, people want a seamless experience. They want it to feel good. But actually, as you say, perhaps less focus on the underlying product, what it is attempting to achieve for the customer, what innovative solutions you could offer them around even a core product. How could you configure a product in a way which is smarter, which gives the user more flexibility, which also transitions with the different stages of their lives.
Correct.
And I think there's more that banks could do on that. And PFM, as an example, has its role to play in terms of the ability to budget, the ability to enrich transactions, et cetera. But it's still kind of on the periphery of the main core product. And I think there is more that product teams could do, also to track people as they move through different life stages.
You talked about how consultancies and technology companies like Temenos could help banks innovate.
Yep.
I'll come to now the 30-year milestone for Temenos, which is why we're here. And I wanted to end with a question for us. So what are the best innovations you've seen coming out of Temenos in the past couple of years? And what do you see as our strengths, particularly against the neo vendors that have come to market in the same period?
So I think over a 30-year history, Temenos can be very proud of the innovation that is brought into the market. I think the very fact that you invest so heavily, consistently, in developing the solutions that you bring to clients is testament to how the longevity and that 30-year milestone, for which you should rightly be very proud. In terms of innovation, I would describe probably a couple of things. So one, the product breadth that you're able to bring. Again, when I think about the neo providers, they would be very jealous of the range, the broad range of services and products and capabilities that you can bring that you've built up over that 30-year period. I mean, the real breadth and depth of experience and product capability that you bring, I think, is very unique. I think also a successful track record of implementations and migrations. Obviously, the biggest challenge levied against most of the neo challenges is they have not yet done a migration at scale. And I think that's a fair current assessment.
We bring up bank live every day.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a fair assessment of what they've currently done. So the fact that you have successfully taken on such a large number of clients, you have migrated at scale, I think is something to be very proud of. So I think in terms of the investment that you're making, obviously the fact that you've continued to make, you know, consistent investments over the last 30 years is allowed you to really innovate the product. Now, there are some very clear examples of where, for example, you have made what was effectively an on-premise solution and you've cloud enabled it and you've put it up into multiple clouds. You're making clearly investments in AI and how do you improve the solution that you take to your clients, the AI capabilities that are inbuilt into the solution, I think is also a differentiator and something, again, you should be very proud of. So the fact that you have enabled the platform to be cloud enabled, the fact that it's cloud agnostic, I think that gives you a quite unique differentiator against some of your competitors in the marketplace. The fact that you have continually delivered a set of examples of AI that can be used inside the solution to drive business benefit, I think, again, is something to be very proud of. And again, just testament to the fact that you continue to invest continually in the platform and its growth.
Thank you so much, Mark, for coming over to our offices for this very insightful podcast.
Kanika, very pleased to have been here. Very glad you asked me and very excited by listening to the rest of the 30-year celebration podcasts.
Thank you.
Thanks so much both for your insights. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and found it valuable. Stay tuned for more episodes coming soon, featuring Temenos and client leaders from across the world of banking. Thanks and take care.